In the following interview with Inside Higher Ed's editors and reporters, Amherst College President Carolyn Biddy Martin discusses the Massachusetts College's initiatives to admit and graduate students from low-income backgrounds, efforts that were rewarded this week with a $1 million prize from the Jack Kent Cook Foundation.
I guess to start, there are a lot of different things that went into this award and that the campus has, that the college has been doing. What things specifically under your leadership have you done to reach out to low-income students who are coming to campus to help them?
Well, we're using the same strategies that really got started under Tony Marks's leadership. We've worked really closely with Questbridge, as you probably know, for years, and Amherst was one of the founding members or partners. With Questbridge, we get more students, very high-achieving, low-income students, through Questbridge than through any other means. And so what we've done, to be honest, is just continue to do well the things that we had been doing. We have admissions staff who spend 30 to 40% of their travel going to under-resourced schools and areas. So the process of identifying students and then working with them are continuing strategies that have been in place. Another really effective strategy that's been in place for a while is the telementoring program. So we have students who are Pell recipients or low-income or otherwise disadvantaged students who advise Questbridge-identified young people or low-income students that have been identified in another way, help advise them through the application process, the decision processes, financial aid, and so on. I think the work with community organizations, community-based organizations, nonprofits, like Questbridge, have been among the most effective strategies, and we haven't changed those. Our progress has continued. The numbers have gone up, as you saw. But I wouldn't say that our strategies for identifying students and getting them interested in Amherst have changed. We're continuing to host two what we call diversity student weekends. We pay the travel for students to come to Amherst. And as is true, I think, for most colleges and universities, the percentage of potential students who actually end up enrolling who've visited a campus is much higher than the general numbers. So we're continuing to do all those things. My focus has really been on identifying, I think I said this on the phone, what I call those invisible opportunity gaps, or opportunity gaps that are invisible at least to some, that occur or exist once students get on campus. On the one hand, adding forms of financial help solves some of those problems. And I think I mentioned on the call you heard earlier some of the examples of how Amherst extends more aid to lower income students. So they get a startup fund in their fall semester. They get money for travel if they can't afford to go back home. What we're trying to do now is raise enough money to pay for unpaid internships for low income students so they can take advantage of them. Amherst has for a few years given students who are on work study, because all students have a work commitment, giving them one summer free from having to make good on that work commitment so that they can take advantage of internships. So those are the kinds of things we're doing. Then what I would say is that making this work takes a coordinated and integrated effort of all constituencies at a college or university, from the board to the president, the administration, obviously, the faculty, even more obviously. I just got an email from a legendary member of Amherst faculty, now retired, who read about the prize and said, be sure to make the point that the faculty considers the changes in the student body at Amherst to have made teaching even more exciting than it already was at Amherst. Then, obviously, staff from the admissions office to student affairs and beyond not only have to be on board, but everyone has to understand the value to the college of having the student body that we have now and is looking for those gaps that I mentioned before, and then the students themselves. So once a college or university does the work of diversifying its student body, there's a huge amount of work that then remains. And at Amherst, for example, we've done a lot of work to transform the student affairs function. We're looking at our residential model and how it might be changed, all really in the effort of trying to give students better opportunities to interact across entrenched boundaries of various kinds, and also to ensure that students can take advantage of what they bring to one another, but also the academic and co-curricular experiences at Amherst.
One of the things that jumps out at me about the things that you say is what a lot of what you talk about is not just getting low-income students onto campus, it's keeping them on campus once they are there.
Right.
Is that an area that traditionally is lacking, I guess? You talk a lot about funding for students to do things like go on job interviews. Is that an area that traditionally, in your experience, you've found students drop out because of that, or maybe wander,
do
not stay on campus because of that?
No. That really has not been a problem at Amherst. The retention rates for students who are on Pell Grants or who are otherwise disadvantaged or lower income are close to the same as they are for students overall. The graduation rates are also at the same general rate. So no, it's not that we do these things or are working, not that we're working to identify these opportunity gaps. We are, but what we're really doing, and I think the thing that's the most valuable, is listening to the students tell us where they see opportunities that other students could take advantage of or are taking advantage of that they either can't afford to, or, and it's not always money that stands in the way. It might be work. It could be the intensity of the academic experience at Amherst and the sheer amount of work that it takes for any student at Amherst to do well. It, in my experience, given that I've really only spent the last five years of my time in higher ed at Amherst, I have found that its reputation for academic rigor and the high demands of the faculty, of students, also of one another, those reputations are well deserved. And it's important to ensure that every student who's enrolled at Amherst can actually gain access to and succeed in whatever part of the curriculum he or she has come in wanting to pursue. And that means paying attention to what some people call achievement gaps, and which are at many institutions significant achievement gaps. At Amherst, it's harder to find them because the retention and graduation rates are so high. Students go on to do remarkable things, and they also go on to do things that constitute giving back in quite significant ways to society in general. I don't mean to Amherst in particular. But when it comes to, I'm interested in the following questions. When I first got to Amherst, I said, where are Amherst's achievement gaps? Are there any? And for the first retreat, the Board of Trustees retreat that was held when I became president, I asked institutional research to look to see if there was some way to determine whether students, for example, who had come in saying they wanted to be pre-med or eventually go to medical school, had actually been able to succeed in the pre-med program. It's hard. You have to find proxies for things because the data is hard to get and to follow. But we found some things that we thought were decent proxies, and there are differences across groups. I consider that a problem, even though it's a very high-class problem to have, I guess. But we want to make sure, and that's what we're working on now, that if students come in saying they think they want to major in a STEM field, there's no sort of barely visible or invisible reason, including confidence, that prevents them from doing what they want to do.
So in the materials reading about the award, one of the things that jumped out at me was that Amherst actually admits a few community college transfers every year, and that's gone up.
Yes.
And it's been striking of late how many elite college universities admit next to no one who didn't start as a freshman.
Yeah.
And I wonder if you could talk about why you see that as important. And I guess the criticism of that over the years has been that particularly elite colleges that are very proud of their environment and their culture want somebody there for 4 years. And so what are your thoughts on the importance of admitting some students as community college transfers?
Well, it's all about opportunity. And it's the community college system is a great source of education for many, many, many Americans, including my younger brother, who studied fire science and was a fireman in Virginia. So, I mean, the community college system is critical to educational opportunity in the country. And the students who go there are part of the great talent in the country. And as I've been known to say before, I just believe strongly that it is a pity in a country like this to let so much talent and promise go by the wayside because the educational opportunity isn't there and isn't made readily available. So I think community college is a great source of students. As for the fact that they're only then at Amherst for 2 years or 2.5 years, they contribute enormously. Some of the students with whom I've had the most interesting conversations and know to have contributed to campus conversations in serious ways have been community college students. I'm thinking of one in particular of whom I'm especially fond, who came from Colorado, from community college to Amherst, is going to graduate at the end of the fall semester with a major in biophysics and biochemistry, will go to graduate school or do something else fantastic, and is just an enormous asset to the Amherst community. So the notion that the students are only contributing to or benefiting from the Amherst culture if they're there for 4 years is simply not the case. Of course, it's easier to build community with a longer period of time together. That's true anywhere. And having students in residence for 4 years is a foundational premise, and it should remain that. But there are all sorts of ways to enrich the culture.
But could you see that going up? Because, you know, like this
community
this,
college.
Community college enrollment at elite college, like
yes.
You wrote, the Princeton University has banned it for 20 years.
Yeah.
And many of your peer institutions really admit one or two.
Yeah.
And your numbers are large by comparison, but not large compared to public universities.
That's right.
Or many others.
Yes.
Should elites and Amherst go up more? I mean, you're already sort of above average for your peer group,
right.
But
should
not
we?
Really that high.
I think we should go up, and I think we will go up. And it's, again, a benefit to the college. I've talked about the social, cultural, and academic benefits, but it's also an enrollment benefit. The more students we encourage and succeed in getting to go abroad, for example, the more students who take years off, and it doesn't happen much at Amherst, but students these days have a range of options that can be positive depending on who they are, and good opportunities for them to seize. And transfer students are also a way of managing enrollment and ensuring that we have a full student body. That really isn't the primary reason, but it is a reason that would make you wonder, perhaps,
mm-hmm.
why transfer students are not a greater source of interest.
I mean, broadening from Scott's question, Amherst kind of got with this program ahead of many of its peers in terms of the sort of focus on low-income students. And what you're talking about, and what you're talking about with this award, this is a long haul, right? I mean, it requires some real. I mean, what you're talking about focusing on, this is not something that happens quick, especially since we're talking in many cases about cultural changes. That,
right.
I mean, you can throw money at the problem if you happen to be an institution that has money, and you can make some progress there, but that doesn't necessarily fix it. But so,
that's
but
right.
So as you've as you've moved into this world, since you've been at Amherst and talked with the peers, I mean, Tony got this ball rolling, but are you finding, I assume are lots of your peers sort of asking you, come to you looking for help for how to do it well, since you were sort of out there ahead? I mean, Vassar sort of was followed in your wake a little bit. And so what's your sense of what's happening and whether this is really a moving, a sort of a movement among the elites?
It's a good question. You point out, and I want to make sure to emphasize, that Tony Marks was really responsible with the then board and the faculty and staff at Amherst in putting in place the policies and the commitments that needed to be made. And it is a long-term process. Mm-hmm. As you say, perhaps especially when you get to the point of having assembled a diverse student body and then look at the kinds of differences that makes. The positive differences, which are extraordinary, and also the challenges that get created. Mm-hmm. Have presidents or leaders at other institutions looked to Amherst or asked for ideas? I think most of the elite institutions in the country who can afford and have a commitment to doing this probably know what strategies they think are best suited to their institution. I think Tony got more of these kinds of questions while he was president, probably. We'd have to ask him. Yeah. But I think just based on my conversations with Tony, I think he would say a good example would be Porterfield at Franklin and Marshall, who I know talked a great deal with Tony when Tony was putting in place what was needed at Amherst. And I'm sure there are other examples of people who did. I think right now the discussions, maybe because I'm seeking them out as much as because others are seeking us out, the conversations are as focused, not more, but as focused on the challenges and opportunities once a diverse student body has actually chosen to come to your institution.
Amherst was among the many colleges that in the fall had sustained student protests, led but not exclusively involving minority students. And I'm wondering, as you look back on that, what did you hear? Are there changes being made as a result? And I don't mean the whole Lord Jeff thing, but the college experience itself. What do you make of that, particularly given how much acclaim Amherst has for reaching out to create a more diverse student body?
It's a good question. I think we learned a great deal. I would say one of the things we all learned is the importance of telling and listening to one another's stories and coming to a better understanding of different people's experiences. And actually, the sit-in in Frost Library at Amherst was really an event that was focused on students standing up, witnessed by, at certain times during the weekend, hundreds of students who were there to listen, standing up and talking about their backgrounds, talking about what they've experienced at Amherst, helping the hundreds who were listening understand what difference the differences make. Identifying what I called earlier the opportunity gaps that students from more privileged backgrounds simply might not see, the faculty might not be aware of, the administration hadn't yet understood adequately. And in that sense, I think on campus, the events in Amherst were experienced as a positive set of events. It's very difficult for people off campus, I think, to understand why, even on the part of the board, the so-called Amherst Uprising has come to be seen as a positive event. But on campus, I think it broke some silences, it eased some tensions that were there and would be there inevitably, and it allowed people to listen to one another. It also allowed people who didn't agree, especially with the initial demands that students made, to find ways to speak up in disagreement, either in classrooms or in dorms and residence halls, and over time, a wider variety of opinions about what had occurred became clear. The other thing I would say is at Amherst, this was a, I think, 3-day event. The students acknowledged on day two that they had drawn up their demands too hastily and that they wanted to work with the faculty and the administration to make the changes that really needed to be made. And in the months since, we've really been working to put in place the kinds of changes mm-hmm. that make sense.